Hello and welcome to Bat Flips and Nerds, the podcast that gives you a British take on baseball. I'm John McGee. A special treat for you this week, I'm joined by the GB head coach, Liam Carroll, to talk about their two upcoming tournaments this September, the European Baseball Championship in the Netherlands next week, and the World Baseball Classic Qualifier, which is taking place in Brooklyn towards the end of this month. Liam talks a bit about his background, growing up in Hackney and then in Somerset, how he got into baseball, and how he progressed his career at the University of Nevada in Las Vegas, which explains the fact that a dyed-in-wool Cockney has something of a mid-Atlantic twang. He talks a bit about the fact that he's a voluntary coach, he's completely unpaid, which itself is pretty inspiring for a guy who gives up so much time to his sport here in the UK. But it doesn't take away from the fact that he's a really confident guy, and you'll see that come across during the course of the conversation, that although he doesn't get paid and he doesn't have the star quality of some of his contemporaries who will be taking on out in Brooklyn, he certainly believes in himself as much as they will. It was a fascinating conversation. I really enjoyed having it. I hope you enjoy listening to it. That'll be coming up right after the jingle. Joining me today for a special episode of Bat Flips and Nerds is Liam Carroll. And Liam, for those of you who don't know, is the head coach of the Great Britain baseball team. Hello, Liam. How are you?
I'm very well, John. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. It's a real pleasure to be able to talk to you, and a real pleasure to talk to you about some really exciting things that you've got coming up with the team in the next couple of months. You do have the World Baseball Classic qualifier coming up in Brooklyn at the end of September, and then the European Baseball Championships follow shortly after that. But before we get on to the rosters, the teams, your expectations for those two tournaments, I just wanted to start by talking a little bit about you, Liam. If I remember rightly, you're from Luton, is that right?
I live in Luton now. Originally, home is Hackney. So while the accent's a little bit of a mishmash, I am a proper Cockney.
You're a proper Cockney. Okay. So how does a Cockney go about getting into baseball? How do you go from being a lad from London's East End and getting into baseball and then ending up in a position like yours?
It's a great question, and I think a good story. And I think the first thing that I would say is to apologize for the names that I'll drop. But given the story and the guys that have made such an important impact on me in getting me to this position, I think it's important to recognize a few people here and there.
By all means.
So I suggest people put their helmets on and strap in for the name dropping. It's also pretty cool, too, that Glenn Robertson, who's our operations director with Great Britain Baseball and part of the Brentwood Stags operation, is also a proper Cockney, born within the sound of Bow Bell. So we have two East London guys that are running Great Britain Baseball right now. So I was born to an English mother and an American father. He had moved from New York to Dublin and then Dublin to London. And so I was born within the faith, as he would say. My father, Patrick, was from New York and a hardcore Brooklyn Dodgers fan growing up. So while there wasn't a ton of baseball for him when he came over, probably the extent of it was listening to World Series games on the old Air Force's radio network that you could just about pick up a signal on back in the 80s. I was introduced to baseball at a very young age. I mean, some of my earliest memories are around baseball. The challenge, obviously, was finding places to play. And I remember just before we left London when I was about 7 or 8, we had found the Waltham Forest Angels in East London, and I spent half of a season with them. Never got to play a proper game, but I remember practices out in Leytonstone where Waltham Forest is, and that was my introduction to British baseball. And then from there we had moved to Somerset, where there was no baseball in the town we lived in. My dad became very good friends with a landlord at his local hostelry who was another American transplanted to the UK, and they ended up starting softball for the guys in the bar that wanted to experience baseball, with slow pitch being a nice gateway into baseball for a lot of people. And that became a baseball team, the Crew Kern Cutters, who played in Baseball Southwest in the early mid-90s.
Wow. And
at that sort of time, my dad had got more heavily involved in British baseball as a whole. He had written some articles for some old publications that existed then and was getting involved in the baseball history aspect of things. And Ian Smythe, who at the time was the head coach of the GB Juniors, and my father became good friends, and through that relationship was invited to a tryout team, or excuse me, a tryout for the U15 or cadet national team in 1996. Mm-hmm. So I went from being involved sort of on the periphery in Baseball Southwest, which wasn't a BBF league, to involved in the national team, thanks to the relationship my dad had with Ian Smythe. And I remember vividly the tryout in Croydon at the South London Pirates facility in 1996. The tryout was specifically for the U15 national team, but the U18s also had a game that day against the Old Timers. And along with several other of the U15s, we were invited up to play with the U18s. And the first thing I ever did, and I told this to our players when we had our first practice earlier this year, the first thing I ever did as a GB player was to let a ground ball through my legs. Not the best start, but somehow they did select me for the U15s. So I'm now in my 20th year with the program, and somehow I've become the head coach of a national team that will play in the World Baseball Classic, and it all started with a ground ball through the legs. So a message for our players earlier this year that failure is part of the game, and you deal with it, and the better you deal with it, the better success you'll have.
Fantastic. So you started in the early 90s. What's been the progression route for you from a player in the GB program through to being the coach? I know you spent some time out at the University of Nevada in Las Vegas. How did you end up there, and what impact has that had on your career as a coach?
A massive one. You know, I figured out fairly early in my career that if I had a future at the highest levels, it wasn't going to be playing. I had, when I was about 16, decided that I wanted to go to the U.S. for high school or college baseball. And that was largely thanks to the impact of a few coaches through the MLB Envoy program, largely, that would send college coaches over to the U.K. And also through various Great Britain players who had made that jump over to the U.S. Guys like Gavin Marshall, from Hull, Alex Malahoudis from Tonbridge and Brighton, Nick Carter, also from the Southeast, really inspired me to go away and find out if I was actually good. And as is, I think, needed, given the more extensive opportunities, go from playing once or twice a week here in Great Britain to playing every day, and speeding up the learning curve. So I went out to California to play junior college baseball, and figured out quickly how far behind I was. I think if I had spent a few more years in the U.S. prior to college, then I could have succeeded as a college baseball player. But the jump was very big. And so then the decision was, what's next? And I had a few offers from some small colleges to continue my playing career, but an opportunity came up at UNLV, Nevada, Las Vegas, where my coach at Porterville College, Brett Davis, knew well the new coach at UNLV, Buddy Goldsmith. And Buddy had called Brett actually looking for players, and he didn't have any there, but said, hey, look, I've got a guy who's wanting to start his coaching career potentially. And Buddy gave him the opportunity to join staff at UNLV and finish my degree. And that was an experience that really changed, not necessarily the direction of my career in baseball, but provided massively more opportunities for me to become a coach with the experience needed to coach at the highest levels.
And what exactly was it that you were doing there? Because, you know, you're a relatively young guy. As you said, you were finishing your college degree alongside the coaching. So, you know, was it, you know, a glorified bat boy, or were they really letting you get your hands dirty?
It was a progression where maybe at the beginning it was closer to the bat boy, but by the end I had a good amount of responsibility. I spent 3 years initially finishing my degree and working with the baseball program, and that would be anything from coaching on the field to assisting with their camps program to assisting with travel to assisting with academic progression, which is a massively important part of college athletics, because if you don't make your grades, you don't get to play. And gradually over time, I became responsible for more areas to the point where I returned for 2 additional years where I was only with the baseball program. I'd finally got my degree and a fully fledged member of staff with far more responsibility. And I think one of the beautiful things that the college athletics experience provided me, given my present role, both in terms of national team specifically and how we can have an impact on helping clubs improve their standards across the boards, is having a hand in so many different areas. It wasn't just what's on the field. We're only going to be on the field for a few hours a day with a practice or a game, but we're going to have a ton of time in the office. And the typical day at the college level, we'd be in the office anywhere between 6 and 7, and sometimes we wouldn't leave until 11 or midnight. So there's so many areas in your recruiting, in your field maintenance, in your travel, like I've referenced, in your video analysis, alumni relations, so many areas that I was fortunate to get involved with that are important to running a program. And as well as being the head coach of Great Britain, I am the national team's program official on the BBF board, so I have a responsibility for so many areas. And my experience in Las Vegas certainly prepared me for that.
Fantastic. It sounds like you really did get a taste of absolutely everything there. And I guess that's been really useful for you in terms of running a program as you do. I was interested to understand where you went after Las Vegas. So you obviously didn't go from being a guy as part of that program to fully formed and come out the other end as the GB head coach. What's happened in the intervening time, and when did you take the reins as head coach of the GB team?
So I had, between my stints in Las Vegas, I'd spent 3 years and then a year and a bit back in England, and then went back for the last 2 years in Vegas. And during that break, I worked for Baseball Softball UK as a club and coach development officer in London. Then when I'd finished my second stint in Las Vegas, a similar role had opened up at Baseball Softball UK again. So not necessarily the script you'd write in advance, but tremendous opportunities to leave Las Vegas, get back to London, and have not a job waiting for me, but a job that arose in a very timely manner. Throughout my time in Las Vegas, I had been involved with the national teams program. I would coach for our youth national teams in the summers. It was Tom Gillespie, who at the time was, I think, performance director or director of game development for British baseball and the national teams, had invited me to join the U18 staff in 2004. So I had stayed involved throughout my time away. And then when I returned in 2010, as well as the Baseball Softball UK position, I was all involved as much as I could be with Great Britain Baseball, and that was back involved with the U18s again in 2010 with Paul Vernon from Bracknell, who was another guy with a tremendous impact on me, both as a coach of mine and as a colleague. Just then, I think fortuitous with how things have unfolded to have the opportunity to climb the ladder to the national team. Sam Dempster, the previous national team head coach, had began with Jason Greenberg from Hearts, a U23 program, which I joined in 2012. The only staff member for that team was Joe Ratcliffe, who's now our operations manager for the GB Lions. So moved from the youth to the adult level in 2012. And then when Sam stepped down following the last European Championships, I felt like I was ready to apply for the top position, with a vested interest in being able to deliver at the highest levels, given my experience. But also, I thought it was time that we should have, once again, a domestic-based head coach. So definitely a case of right place, right time.
Brilliant. And you talked a little there about when you were in Las Vegas working ridiculously long hours doing every aspect of the job. I can't guess that you're doing quite such strenuous hours, but I imagine that in a sort of skeleton staffed squad such as the GB one, you probably are a bit of a jack of all trades. So I was interested just to hear, you know, what's a day in the life of Liam Carroll like in terms of your duties for the GB squad?
A day in the life would be different every day, I think. I'd say the biggest difference between what I've been doing here and what I was doing in Las Vegas is the amount of time on the field, not the hours necessarily. In Las Vegas, we had a 56-game schedule plus playoffs plus practice plus an autumn schedule, whereas with national teams, the unique aspect of that as a coach is how seldom you actually get on the field. Some days for me, it is a typical day job. It's 9 to 5. Some days it's only an hour or two here and there because I have to look at making a living as well because it is a volunteer position. And other days it's one of those Las Vegas days where it's up early and up late, especially given World Baseball qualifier aspects where we're looking at working with people in different time zones.
Yeah, I imagine that's pretty strenuous. So if you're doing this as a voluntary position, how is it that you make your money? Is it as a, it's a slightly dirty question. Is it doing baseball coaching, softball coaching on the side as well?
It is. And one of the things I'd suggest if there is anyone listening that has aspirations to spend more time in baseball and to make a career out of it, it's don't expect to get paid. You have to put your time in and grind it out. And certainly I would have loved it if by now there had been a payoff, so to speak. But the payoff does arrive in different forms, whether it's the opportunity to be on the WBC or at the WBC or just the general opportunity and privilege of working with some phenomenal players and coaches and staff. To pay the bills, first of all, I have a phenomenal partner in Rebecca Owen, who plays some slow pitch out there as well. And she's incredibly supportive, knowing that it's a roller coaster ride with the various hats that I have to wear to make things work. Baseball, Softball UK have been incredibly supportive of me and generous to me in keeping me involved in their programs since I stopped working for them a couple of years ago. So the High Performance Academy, which Baseball Softball UK runs, is very closely connected to the national teams program and coaching within the HPA each winter and a little bit into the spring and summer is one way that I'm getting paid to coach. And then there's lessons that I'll run. I'll do team coaching. And that's not just with baseball. I've done that with slow pitch and fast pitch as well. Slow pitch especially being so much bigger from a popularity sport and the number of people playing does provide a few more opportunities to get paid to coach.
Great. So I think that's a good point at which to segue into a bit of a conversation about the general health of the sport of baseball in the UK, in Great Britain. And by all means, talk about fast pitch and slow pitch too. You're absolutely right about slow pitch. I play myself, and certainly here in London, we've got many leagues and many teams and many people playing. But on baseball specifically, how do you feel as the head coach of the team that the game is progressing, and what's the standard of the domestic league, and have you seen improvement in your time being a close follower and being involved in the game here in the UK?
You know, I was at the NBL finals on Saturday and really enjoyed the game one. I wasn't able to catch games 2 and 3, but the caliber of play in that game between the London Mets and the Southampton Mustangs was as high as I've seen in a long time. So there's definitely progress being made. What was especially exciting to see during that game is, as well as some imports that were really raising the standard, especially in the pitching department, there were a bunch of Great Britain players out there, a bunch of other guys that might become Great Britain players one day, and a bunch of others, even if they don't, have strong connections to the British game and aren't an import. So we're certainly headed in the right direction. I do think there is a lot of work to do, whether we're comparing ourselves to what's required at the international level. I know that our players domestically have a very big jump to go to make when we go away to European competition. Or if you don't want to compare it to the international level, just comparing it to our European neighbors, watching the caliber of play and the caliber of facilities compared to our closest European counterparts in the likes of the Belgians, let alone the mighty Dutch. There's a very big gulf emerging. So I think we have a lot of work to do to ensure that coach education, club development programs are suitable for what's out there and that clubs buy in. And that's the challenge for me and I think for other organizations is to make sure the clubs are bought in so that we can raise the standards. And so it's less of a jump, selfishly speaking, when we take our kids or adults away to a European championship that they're a little bit better prepared.
And what exactly is it that's needed then, Liam? Is it better coaching? Is it better facilities? Is it just more repetitions for the young guys who are getting into the game? Is it funding ultimately? I mean, I know that baseball isn't going to be getting a great deal of Sport England or lottery funding, certainly from the way that they're set up. But is that the big thing for you, or is it just, you know, more opportunities, more time, and so on?
Can I say yes to all of those things?
Yeah.
Getting, I guess, to the nitty-gritty, I think the most important thing is participation. There has to be more players, more children playing. And I think regardless of any other factor, if there's more people playing, then there's going to be more better players. The second thing I would say is that our players need to play more baseball. They need to practice more baseball. The typical setup, I think, and I'm not aware of many exceptions to this, is that the British Baseball Club has a two-day-a-week setup. You practice midweek and you play on Sunday. And that's not a setup that allows for players to be prepared. It doesn't necessarily matter about the coaching opportunities that exist within the setting. If you're playing 3, 4, 5, 6 days a week, dare I say it, you're going to be a better baseball player. And I think inevitably, regardless of what we can do about adding quality players through imports, perhaps, if everyone that's playing British baseball, or at least those that really care about elite level competition, are playing 3 to 6 days a week, the standard is going to raise.
Hmm. How do you feel personally about the imports playing in the British Baseball League? Is it kind of a sort of a double-edged sword, really? Are they certainly raising the standard of competition, but maybe denying the opportunity for others?
I agree. I think it is a double-edged sword. I think the key is to figure out how it fits so that it maximizes the impact the import can have. We've had some tremendous programs, both centrally and club-specific, where the imports come in and given back in other ways, whether it's coaching the youth team or running youth camps and that kind of setup. And I think that's important, especially given that it's unlikely that a import's going to come over and be a pure professional, albeit just for a few months. Typically what I see, while sure there's one guy that maybe loses playing time when an import comes over, typically I think the import is better prepared. They're generally a guy that lives the lifestyle of an elite athlete. And as much as anyone can be bitter that their spot's been taken, a comparison might be, well, that guy is in the weight room more than I am. That guy is taking his nutrition more seriously. That guy's having less Saturday nights out before a Sunday game. And they've earned their spot. And I hope that can be a learning opportunity for everyone that the imports meet. I think given the journey that we have to make to raise the standards here, the essential thing is that the import isn't just a guy coming over, pitching 7 innings and doing nothing else. They need to be someone that provides as many learning opportunities to as many different people as possible.
So it's actually, in some respects, it's not a dissimilar setup to a lot of local cricket clubs
have in terms of professionals that come over and they're doing the coaching as much as they're playing in the first team on a Sunday afternoon, really.
Absolutely, absolutely right. And one of the things that I'm very keen to explore in the next few years, and we've had Great Britain players that are overseas based, join the British leagues here and there. The best example at the moment is Spencer Kreisberg with Southampton Mustangs, who has been a tremendous addition to their ball club. I'm very keen to explore with our overseas-based players and with clubs here how we can make more of those imports British players. These guys have passports. These guys are incredibly proud of their British heritage and of playing for representing Great Britain. And all the time the questions are asked about whether there's an opportunity to come over in the summer and if we can establish a program so that more often than not, the import is actually a British citizen who happens to live in America or Canada or Australia, then I think that would be tremendous for both the Great Britain program and for British baseball.
Great. I was going to ask a follow-up question specifically on that. You mentioned Spencer Kreisberg, but who are these guys? Are they, you said you'd like them to be British. Are they guys who've played minor leagues? Are they indie ball players? Are they Dutch players, or where do you find them?
All over the place. You know, it's really a mixed, especially as social media and just connectivity in general has evolved. It comes from so many different ways. We actively recruit to some extent in the US, but not a ton. So most of it does find us. And one of the things that we're always conscious of is how much we should be and need to recruit overseas, given that we've got more and more strong national team players coming through domestically. So we'll have the player who grew up in Britain until a certain age, never knew that baseball existed, went to the US, baseball career evolved, and eventually finds out, whether it's because they've actually done a Google search or it's been on MLB Network with reference to the WBC. We'll have players that haven't grown up as citizens that find out they're eligible and commit to getting their British citizenship. And this typically will happen from the US, Canada, Australia, and South Africa, but it's not just limited to that. There are, as I expect, isn't any surprise given the strength of the former empire, British guys running around all over the world. And what we've always strived to do is to ensure that where we do have overseas-based players involved, they are impact players. They're guys typically that have played professional baseball, if not independent professional baseball, if not college level. So these guys always have come over and made a very big impact, and that's something that I'm excited about for this year's European Championship roster, is the balance of domestic player, overseas-based citizen, and how everyone's going to bring something to the table to help us compete.
Brilliant. I wanted to touch a little bit on some of the successes that you're having at a younger age in the program. I know that your under-15s team did really well in the European Baseball Championships, and I wonder if that bodes well for the future in terms of the young kids coming through.
It certainly does. And the U15 group were an absolute pleasure to coach. We had kids from all around the country. As I referenced earlier, we don't get to spend a ton of time together. That's the nature of the beast at this level. And they came together so well. The team chemistry was phenomenal. And the winning record, making the final, was certainly a tremendous accomplishment. Would we have been ecstatic with promotion to the qualifier? Of course. But we're not measuring at the youth level our success primarily by winning tournaments. That's what we need to do at the senior level. And I think another great comparison is the first year I spent with the U15s in 1996. The extent of the national teams program at that age group, which they were just getting started, was a one-week camp in Leeds, where we played. We practiced for 4 or 5 days and then had a little mini tournament at the weekend. And here we are 20 years later, and we're competing for a place in the European Championship. So there's definitely been progress. And the challenge for us now is to ensure that those players continue to develop knowing that they're not going to be the same team ever again. There's going to be kids that move up. There's going to be kids that stay. There's going to be new kids that join the program. And that's the biggest challenge for us is we've got a spreadsheet that we maintain that has date of births and where kids fit in each age group through about 2021. And the U15s next year is going to be a team that we have to add to. So the recruiting efforts fundamentally will focus on that age group, on the youngest kids, getting the next set of 12-year-olds in the program. And that ties into my comments earlier about the need for participation growth. There's, I think, the youth baseball here is growing at some rate. Some clubs are doing some awesome jobs with their Little League programs. I think that Little League has become the official youth baseball league for British baseball is a good thing. We just need to see a ton more kids so that the very best can get involved in the national team's program.
Great. I wanted to just ask you briefly about a young chap who played in that team in that European baseball qualifier, Connor Brown, who I read a couple of weeks ago had taken part in an MLB camp out in Germany. Is Connor really maybe one of those players we should keep an eye on over the next few years in terms of having the potential to be someone who might break through?
Absolutely. So Connor was with our U18s at the European Championship, and a quick note on the U18s, they finished eighth at the European Championship, which secured our place in the next European Championship at that age group. It's the first time in our program's history that we've retained top-tier status, and that's a tremendous credit to Will Lintern and his staff. They did a phenomenal job with those boys and girl, Laura Hirai, who's one of the cooler stories out there as a girl who played for the GB U18s and the gold medal winning U19 fast pitch team.
Wow.
Back to Connor, a tremendous advertisement for the success you can have when you are bought into the various opportunities that exist. Connor's a kid who's been involved in the academy that Baseball Softball UK run, that's open to anybody that wants to play between, I think, 12 and 25, as long as you want to get after it, join the academy and you're going to get better. Then has been part of the High Performance Academy. So since October last year, we've seen Connor 2 or 3 times a week, every week throughout the winter, and then once more during the week once the season started. And as well as the great opportunities that Hearts Baseball Club have provided him, and I think the Essex Redbacks before that. Connor's a tremendous measure of the impact that these programs can have. He's played for our national team now for a number of years. And when you combine all of these opportunities with the ability that he has, and more importantly, the work ethic and the support that he gets from his family, it's just a tremendous advertisement for what's possible. And I think the coolest thing is Connor is a catcher and a pitcher.
Wow.
And we're very excited to have added Connor to the European Championship roster next month. It's been quite the year for him, from the MLB Academy's tournament earlier in the year, the HPA involvement, the U18 national team staying in the A pool, the MLB camp where he got to work with Barry Larkin and Steve Finley, and then he's going to cap it off with the European Championships. Certainly a year for him to remember.
Yeah, it certainly is. I'm going to ask you about Barry Larkin and Steve Finley again in a minute, but we'll come on to that shortly. Before we do move on to the World Baseball Classic, I just wanted to ask your view on how you feel baseball can get to the next level in GB. You've talked a lot about participation, which is obviously about the groundwork and the hard yards from volunteers on the grassroots level. But is there anything else? I mean, is it just a case of exposure on TV? Do we need to sort of be hanging our hats on getting an MLB game over in London in the way that American football's really taken off in the last 5 or 6 years? Is that what we need? A big splash from MLB or is there a bit more of a hard work way of doing it?
You know, I think it's a combination of things. I absolutely believe that getting baseball back on TV like the old Channel 5 days would be huge. I continue to meet people who tell me that they got involved because of being up at stupid o'clock and seeing that a baseball game was on Channel 5.
That's me too. Yeah.
Awesome. And I think that the Olympic Games will help as well. That's something that we missed out on in 2012, but I'm not bitter about that. A lot of people get hung up on that, but it's done and dusted. Baseball can be massive without the Olympics. Major League Baseball playing here, I think, would be a game changer in terms of the resources that get poured in to provide more exposure for the sport. I think fundamentally the two most important things are achievable without TV, without the Olympics, and without Major League Baseball. It's the balance between the participation, which we've spoken a little bit about, and raising the standards of what's there now. There's a lot of focus on participation. I completely agree that we need more people playing at the youth level especially, but we have to raise the standards of what's around now. If everyone that was playing now had a better facility, had access to better coaching, had the opportunity to play more often, had the opportunity to maybe have more of their games streamed online, if more of the clubs out there did a phenomenal job with their local and regional PR, I think things would get, we'd catch up with our European counterparts very quickly. In terms of participation, I've done enough coaching in schools to know that baseball is always a hit with school kids, as long as you've got the right person selling it, whether it's a little bit of an American accent or the energy, sometimes just, hey, look at this bat. You want to swing it as fast as you can? You want to throw this ball as hard as you can? You want to wear this catcher's gear? It's a hit. And we need to get more people into schools. Now, fundamentally, of course, that requires resources, but I don't think it necessarily requires massive financial injection. I think it requires creativity and energy and vision for the club, and specific to that within a club development plan, ensuring that you've got a mechanism to connect whatever you do in schools to your club program and getting them from school A to your field across the street or a mile away. I believe so much that if we can collectively between Baseball Softball UK, Great Britain Baseball and the Federation and the clubs find a way to have a we're going to make some massive headway in the number of people playing and therefore the caliber of player and therefore ultimately the success of the national team's program.
Brilliant. That sounds like you've got it all in place. So that's at the grassroots end. I want to come back to dwell a little bit on back on the top end of things. So when we set this conversation up, it was off the back of the fact that the World Baseball Classic qualifier is happening in Brooklyn by the time this podcast goes out, I think it's going to be 3 weeks away. So I think the first question for you, Liam, and I guess the $64 million question is, how are you going to do? How are GB going to do? Are you going to be in the World Baseball Classic next year? Or is this about your team and your squad gaining a bit more experience and finding out a bit more about themselves?
Well, for anyone out there that's not read about Great Britain baseball very much, we have a mission that is about a year old. Now, part of that mission is to perform, which is obviously the expectation for any national team's program is you're there to perform. But what's perhaps unique about our mission is that we included inspire and develop as strands along with perform. And the thing about the WBC, with the exception of the Olympics, which we can't count on at the moment, is the WBC provides us an opportunity to do all three. The level of inspiration, given the caliber of event and the caliber of player and the caliber of coach, and the opportunities, therefore, that'll provide in the development factor, it's going to be a massive, massive event for us. But perform, again, is the primary aspect here. And I would say that we're quietly confident. I'm incredibly excited about our roster. We have some very, very, very good baseball players that will be coached by some very, very good coaches. And I think a bunch of hype's been made about the Israeli roster, and rightfully so. They've done a tremendous job putting their team together and lead the league, so to speak, in the number of affiliated players. I think what's important to remember is that only 10, if you include your DH, can be on the field at any one time. And as Brian Kane, the sports psychologist who worked with the High Performance Academy earlier this year said, it's not the best team that wins, it's the team that plays the best. And I don't know whether the 10 from Israel or the 20 affiliated players are better than us. I know that we can play better for a week. And that's also not to, to discount the Brazilians, who will be very, very good. Very, very good. And I think the de facto favorite is certainly the number one seed, having been in the last main event in 2013. And then Pakistan is really the dark horse, and we don't know anything about them. In terms of their personnel, it'll be a tremendous tournament. And like I say, I think we've got a tremendous chance, and we'll certainly be playing to achieve the performance strand of our mission more so than anything else.
I'm going to ask you a little bit about the squad in a minute, but you talked a little bit about Brazil there, and certainly we touched on something to do with them a couple of moments ago. How do you feel, Liam, being the boy from the East End of Hackney, sitting in the GB dugout, and in the Brazil dugout, you've got no less than one of the greatest players ever to play the game of baseball in Barry Larkin as the head coach. How does that make you feel?
It's incredible. It's an honor. The closer that we've been getting to the event, the more surreal that it all seems. I think two important points for me to note are, one, given the caliber of staff I have around me, how confident I am in our coaching staff to perform at a very high level. And then the other aspect is, and you nailed it, Barry Larkin was one of the best players in the history of the game. That doesn't necessarily account for him being one of the best coaches of all time. And Barry does a tremendous job. He's done a tremendous job with Brazil. He's become a regular on the international baseball circuit with his involvement in Major League Baseball's elite academy camps. But you could argue that my coaching experience is as long as is Barry's. So I'm certainly just thrilled to share a field with a guy with his resume, his pedigree. But feel like from a coaching perspective, we're on an even setting.
Brilliant. The squad then, you've got a good mix of affiliate players. I think it's only at the time of recording the affiliate players that have been announced. I guess that was to allow time for the end of the domestic season over the course of the weekend. So who stands out, if anyone, within your team? I know it's difficult for you to sort of pick favourites amongst all of your children, but are there any within that squad who you think are going to have a real impact over the course of the WBC, or some guys who you think might push through into the big leagues? I know you've got at least four or five who are in the AAA affiliates of their squads at the moment. So is there anyone who you think that us guys over in the GB should be keeping an eye on and hanging our hats on?
Absolutely. You know what? I think the first thing is that 1 through 28, just incredibly excited about the roster, and everyone selected has earned that spot, and it's going to help us during the WBC. Since probably 24, 48 hours ago, the entire roster has been announced. And I am thrilled that some domestic players are on that roster, in Jordan Edmonds from Southampton, Richard Klein, who's from the Lake District, played for Cartmel Valley and now plays in the German leagues, Ray Martinez, also from Southampton. So just very exciting to have the domestic player earn their place on the WBC roster. Now, at the other end of the spectrum, the players with the I didn't mention Michael Askwy, which is remiss of me given he's the all-time BBF home run leader. Southampton Mustangs obviously very happy with their season and their contribution to the national team's program this September. Now, with the affiliated guys, they're all very, very good players, and most of them are very young and are having tremendous success within their organizations. And I do expect we'll see some of those guys knocking on the big league's door within the next 3 or 4 years. I think names that stand out are Chris Brissett, especially as a guy that's been with our program since 2009, played in the World Baseball or in the World Cup in 2009, and two or three European Championships since then. Who's in AAA with the Reds, just one step away from the big leagues. And then there's two 40-man players, Michael Roth with the Texas Rangers, who has been in the big leagues both with the Rangers and previously with the Angels, and out of his draft class, I think was the fastest player to make it from being picked in the draft to the big leagues. Jacob Esch, who pitched with us in the 2012 WBC qualifier and in the 2014 European Championship, who was in AAA with the Marlins. And then Chris Reed, who is also in AAA with the Marlins and had a little bit of a spell in the big leagues last year. So there's a bunch of guys not only knocking on the door of the show, but some guys that have that experience, which I think is huge for us going into this tournament, knowing that there's similar experience on other teams.
Great. It's interesting to hear about Richard Klein. I didn't realize that he was from the Lake District. That's where I'm from as well. So it's nice to know that I'm not the only person from the Lake District that managed to pick up on baseball. So there were two of us.
There's tremendous history up there. And the Cartmel Valley Lions is a club that has given so much to Great Britain baseball, both in terms of players and staff. When I started out as a coach with the U18s, my first operations manager was Mr. P, Jonathan Pearson, who has had such an impact on the club up there. Both his boys, Ben Pearson, who will be with us at the European Championship, and his other son, James Pearson, have played for Great Britain. James was part of the Oxford team that just fell short at the AAA National Championships. Our operations manager for the U15s at the moment, Anita Atkinson, is also a Cartmel Valley Lion. There's just so many, and I apologize that I won't name everybody.
no, that's okay.
The Lake District's baseball game is strong.
Wow, I never knew. That feels like it's something that I'm going to have to investigate next time I'm back visiting my parents. In terms of the makeup of your squad, you've got a good mix of guys from affiliates, guys who are here as imports, who are working on GB passports, and then some domestic players as well. I wondered how the guys like Michael Askey and Richard Klein feel about sharing the stage with the affiliate players on a big stage like the Baseball Classic in a stadium as brilliant as the Brooklyn Cyclones one.
They're thrilled. I would note that they do feel like they've earned it, and the excitement is more about the event specifically than it is their teammates being playing at a higher level. I think they'll feel like equals, and I know that the affiliated guys will do a tremendous job making these guys feel like equals, because everyone has earned the right to be here. They're just very excited to play. I think they recognize that the affiliated players are going to come in better prepared and probably have a better chance of seeing more significant playing time. But they're incredibly excited about the event. They are ball players. These guys live the lifestyle of baseball players, and I'm thrilled that they get the opportunity to play, like you say, in a phenomenal facility that will be a tremendous reward for their effort over the years.
And on the flip side, how do the guys like Michael Roth and Chris Bissett and Jacob Esch and Chris Reed feel about playing for GB? You mentioned a little bit earlier in our conversation that they're really tied to the program. They're really proud to play for GB. Is that the same of the guys who are playing out in MLB as MLB affiliates every day?
There's a varying level of familiarity with our program. Some of these guys are going to be new faces. In our communications with all of them, they are very, very excited about the event and the opportunity to represent Great Britain. And it's been rare that we've had such a player not really buy into being part of the GB family and not just playing here and there. In terms of the guys you mentioned that have a little bit more history with our program, they're just first class in how they go about things with relation to building relationships with our program within the difficulties of being based overseas. These guys all travel a tremendous amount. Once the season ends, it's not just a case of shutting it down and sitting on their couch. They're all busy in the winter, but continue to show willingness to come over. And typically that's not me asking, hey, Chris or Mike or Jacob, do you want to come over to England? We'd love to have you over and meet some people. They reach out to me, and it just becomes a question of how we can fit it into their schedule. We had Michael Roth here a few years ago, and it was on short notice, and he spent some time at the BHK MLB office talking about his experiences. What I hope is that these guys can figure out their schedules with their organizations a little bit earlier in future off seasons, so that we can give everyone here as much notice as possible, because these guys are just so keen to spend time here giving back, which is a common theme that I see among the affiliated players, whether they're young or more experienced, is the tremendous willingness to give back to the game that's provided them those opportunities, and specifically Great Britain baseball. It's very, very cool.
That's really great to hear. Yeah, it'd be fantastic to have a catch up with them if they are over this winter, and maybe get an exclusive for the podcast beyond this one we've got from you, Liam. That'd be fantastic. In terms of the other squads, we talked a little bit about Brazil. You said that they were in the World Baseball Classic last time round. You've touched a little bit on Israel. Is it really about getting your team set up, making sure that you execute your plans, play at the level that you want to, or do you really need to prepare for the quality of the squads that are going to be in front of you?
We'll absolutely spend time, and it's already began since the rosters were released, scouting our opponents. Our coaching staff is first class, and we've shared some emails, and they've kind of been let off the chains, and sooner than I expected, have got some information back on our opponents. We will focus primarily on us and getting to know our players that are new, formulating a game plan based on our strengths primarily. And then within the opportunity, the information that's available, which for Israel is plentiful, for Brazil is a little bit less, for Pakistan is essentially non-existent, spend time learning about those players and those coaches and their tendencies, and it'll help us have a competitive advantage that I believe.
I just wanted to dwell briefly on that Israel squad, which as you said earlier on is certainly on paper the most starry. And as a Red Sox fan myself, I couldn't really take my eyes away from the notion that these chaps who are playing for the Southampton Mustangs on one weekend and two or three weekends later, they might find themselves facing up in the batter's box against a World Series winning catcher pitcher battery in Craig Breslow and Ryan Lavanway. I mean, that's got to be a bit surreal for some of these guys.
It is. I think the important thing is that they are talented for it. And what we always see is when these players go away, and whether it's Southampton and London going away to, or London hosting a SEEB tournament or joining us for a national team's event, the talent really kicks into overdrive when they're on the field every day, and they'll catch up pretty quick. And the fortunate thing is that we have the European Championships immediately prior to the WBC. So those guys will have a good amount of time in Holland on the field every day before we head over to Brooklyn.
Brilliant. I just wanted to, before we talk a little bit about the European Baseball Champs, to talk about the coaching staff that you've got in place for Brooklyn, which is really quite impressive. So you've got Mike Nikias, the former Blue Jays catcher, who I know was a stalwart of the GB team for many years. You've got the University of San Diego hitting coach, Bradley Marcelino, and the one that really stands out, the San Diego Padres legendary closer, Trevor Hoffman. So I was interested. I mean, Mike Nikias kind of explains itself, but how have you got Bradley Marcelino and Trevor Hoffman involved, and what do you feel that they're going to bring to your team?
Well, the first call I made in terms of coaching staff was actually Zach Grafser, who is our pitching coordinator with Great Britain Baseball. Zach is from St. Louis and moved here a couple of years ago when his wife, had a work transfer, and Zach really fell into our lap as a pitching coach with tremendous experience and ability. And so Zach was the first guy on staff. From there, Bradley is a longtime friend and teammate. A lot of listeners will be familiar with the Marcelino name, with his father Oscar having played for the Enfield Spartans and the national team back in the 80s. I played with Brad in 2003 at the European Championship and played for his dad at Porterville College in California. So I have a very long and close relationship with Brad. Have followed his progress at University of San Diego and just doing an outstanding job there. And to have a guy with so much coaching experience at a high level, I mean, it was only a couple of years ago that he was coaching Chris Bryant at USD. And wow. combined with that, a guy who started playing for our national team in 1999 and finished in 2012, to have a guy that connected with the program was for me a no-brainer. Trevor Hoffman, pretty cool, huh? So we had, I remember from my playing days within the program, there being rumors of a Trevor Hoffman connection. And I think people probably have read or seen tweets and things by now that Trevor Hoffman's mother is English. So this happened again. This is thanks to Brad, the baseball world being so close knit, the links between Bradley's activities in San Diego and the San Diego Padres, crossover. He's had the opportunity to coach with, and sit down with Trevor Hoffman, and had put the bug in his ear quite a while ago about potentially being involved, with Great Britain Baseball, given the heritage of his family. And then the WBC really tied things together as the perfect opportunity to get him involved. And that he's, it's not just a guy that has a British mom that played in the big leagues. The guy works in player development. He coaches for a living now. And his role with the Padres now meshes incredibly well with his WBC role of being our bullpen coach. I'm thrilled for our pitchers, well, and all players, but pitchers especially, to be able to sit down and shoot things at him, bounce ideas off him, and generally listen to him during the WBC. It's going to be huge for them and for our preparation. And I mean, the final thing on Trevor is, had the opportunity to meet him a few weeks ago, and so impressed with his pride in the English British side of his family, and how excited he is to have the opportunity to represent his mother's side of the family. He's incredibly excited about that, and we're thrilled, obviously, that he does bring the pedigree and experience that he does, as well as the coaching ability. It's very, very exciting. And I think, again, meshes very well with our program's mission of inspire, develop, and perform.
Yeah, it certainly does. And it'll be a real treat for all those guys who are involved. And I'm sure it will be for you too, to sort of share time with him. You mentioned earlier on in this conversation several times that you've got the European Baseball Championships. Forgive me, I said that they were after the WBC, but you've corrected me in saying that they're before. So what exactly is the timescale for the European Baseball Championships?
So we'll be reporting for duty on the 4th of September. And we'll have a week together before the Euros start on Friday, the 9th of September, and they run through the 18th. So we'll kick things off with a game against the host Dutch on Friday, the 9th of September at 7 p.m. local time. So it's very exciting to play the hosts in a tremendous facility, again, as well as the Brooklyn facility being world-class. The facility in Hoofddorp near Amsterdam is very, very, very high caliber. And we're certainly in for a busy September.
Yeah. And, how different are your rosters for the two tournaments?
So we'll carry about 12 of the European Championship players over to the WBC. The challenge for us with wanting to have rosters to be as similar as possible largely relates to how affiliated players' availability at that time of year is much tougher. We're hoping that Chris Brissett will be available for us for the European Championship, but none of the other affiliated players on our WBC roster are available, whether it's through eligibility or through organizational commitments or organizational decisions in how long they'll let players play for an external organization. So in an ideal world, we'd have the same roster, but it's the nature of the beast that things change. And I think that's true for just about every team that has the Euros and the WBC on their slates.
And what are your aims for the Euros? Is it to go and compete? Is it to maintain qualification as you have at the age group level, or is it the same as with the WBC? It's to just fulfill the mission of the team.
We're going in to win a medal. Our program's vision includes, as well as WBC qualification by 2020, includes winning a European gold by 2020, and talking to John Walmsley from BSUK over the weekend about opportunities for fundraising potentially given the Olympic decision. He makes a very good point about how gold resonates more with potential players and certainly potential funders at this time given the success of those athletes out in Rio. So our goal is to medal. The nature of the tournament will first require us to aim to finish top three in our group, and then we'd go and play the top three in the other side of the bracket. And then it's pretty much anyone's game, and it could be a gold, it could be a bronze, but that's our goal, is to finish top three in the group to secure a chance at a medal.
And what would that mean in terms? Would it open up possibly more funding for you if you were able to sort of put that on your application form to Sport England and so on?
I would certainly hope so. I think our program, top to bottom, from the WBC team all the way down to U15s, is making tremendous progress, and there are measures of that within the success of the youth teams this summer. Ultimately, I get it that you have to win to draw. Draw funding in, and I would certainly hope that a medal would open some eyes and give us more of a chance. I'm not going to hold my breath. A lot of the funding for elite sports really depends on being a legitimate medal contender for the Olympics, and until we have more information about the qualification route for Tokyo 2020, it's going to be hard for us to make that case as much as we'll try to UK sport. I think that there's definitely a case for us to have more funding, and we're making those pitches to non-governmental organizations and companies as to why we're a good investment. Looking back at recent history, a European Championship silver medal in 2007, the success of the youth program, I argue that we're doing as well as the football team has. I can't remember when our football team won a European Championship silver medal. And we just have just as many World Cups. There you go, right? So I get it. Not as many kids are playing baseball as they are football. Not as many people are sitting in 40,000 people stadiums as there are in football. But I think we deserve more funding. We're not going to moan about it. We're just going to continue to improve on a daily basis and focus on the process. And I believe that the results will take care of themselves at the European Championship and the WBC. And if we don't get any more attention, if we don't get any more funding, I'm not going to feel like we didn't make our best case to receive it.
Great. The last thing I was going to sort of touch on, and we'll come back to a few places about where we can find you in a minute. You, given that we're on the conversation about funding, I know that you set up an online pledge funding campaign to try and raise funding for the team and for the program. Is that sort of a giveaway as to how much you're trying to raise money, or is it just one way that you're trying to raise funds? And do you want to talk a little bit about that and maybe give people the details of where that is so they can try and find it?
So it's part of many things. we're using the World Baseball Classic as an opportunity to plug more aspects of our program. The fundraising campaign on GoFundMe, which I suggest the best place for people to find it is actually to check out our social media, our Facebook, which is facebook.com/Great Britain Baseball, or our Twitter @GB_baseball, where we continue to post links to the GoFundMe account. The GoFundMe isn't about the World Baseball Classic. It's about using the exposure that the WBC is providing our program to raise money for everything else. The WBC is just a different animal. The support that MLB provides from paying for everything, the uniforms, obviously the facility, the hotels, it's a different animal. But what we're finding is that more people are finding out about our program, and if they want to help us reduce the burden on our players and parents competing, or excuse me, contributing financially to play for Great Britain at every other level besides the WBC, we would love their help, whether it's some money or just sharing this to more people. Ultimately, I think we're going to find people that are sympathetic to our cause and want to help us provide more opportunities for more athletes at a high level. And also, what's really important, talking about our mission to inspire, develop, and perform, the most important part of that, besides how we do internationally, is the impact we can have on British baseball as a whole. We've positioned ourselves as collaborative leaders. We want to be involved as much as possible with coach education, with Baseball Softball UK, with club development, with them also, with getting to as many clubs as we can to share our way of doing things, the GB way, which isn't the only way, but it's a great way. But we can't visit every club in England and Scotland and Wales where they exist, and Northern Ireland where they exist. We can't do it without more resources, because we're all volunteers and need to find ways to minimize financial drains on either our day job or not having day jobs at all.
Yeah, so that's facebook.com/Great Britain Baseball, and on Twitter it's @GB_baseball.
You got it.
Excellent. Just a few sort of parish notices before we wind this thing up. First thing, I think listeners and people following our Twitter and our Facebook feed would be really interested to know if there's a way that they can watch you guys in the World Baseball Classic and the European Baseball Championships. Can you stream those online?
So for the WBC, absolutely. We're pretty sure it won't be on MLB TV for people who have that subscription. What they've done for previous qualifiers is, if you just go to the website, which is worldbaseballclassic.com, there's going to be, whether it's a link to today's games or a direct link on the homepage, they've streamed all of the other qualifiers, and we're expecting the same again. You'll just have to prepare like I guess it is typically for MLB fans to stay up a little bit late. Both of our first two games are confirmed as 7 p.m. Eastern starts.
Ouch.
and if not, I hope that people will be able to watch it at a later date, especially for the kids. I want every kid in our program and every kid that plays baseball in the UK to aspire to play for Great Britain's program. And if they can watch us, but it's the day after at 10 in the morning, then check out worldbaseballclassic.com. For the Euros, we're awaiting information. We know that some of the games are going to be broadcast on Dutch TV. I'm not sure if the Dutch signal is going to be strong enough for guys in the Southeast, maybe, or the Northeast to pick up those signals. But we're waiting for confirmation on what their plan is for streaming. We certainly hope so. We believe that the Hoofddorpe facility, certainly the main field there, would have the capability to do so. It's something that we'll continue to circulate on our Facebook and Twitter accounts when we learn more. So please stay tuned if you'd love to watch us, and we'd love the support.
Yeah, definitely would. I'll keep an eye out. And if we see anything from you, Liam, I'll certainly make sure that we let people know. Just last thing, in terms of following you on social media, how do we find you, and how do we find anybody else who's involved in your team?
So my Twitter is @LiamCarrollGB. I'd love to see more out there. And we have two other coaches on staff with Twitter. Trevor Hoffman is And let me just check this here. T. Hoffman, 51. And Bradley Marcelino is at Coach Marcelino, and that's Marcelino.
Great. So we'll all be sending you plenty of good luck tweets and best wishes during the European baseball tournament and the World Baseball Classic then. I think the last thing that it remains for me is to just say good luck, best wishes, and it's been really fantastic talking to you this morning, and I hope that everybody enjoys listening to it as much as I've enjoyed taking part in it. Thanks very much for your time, Liam, and hopefully we'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you so much for the opportunity and support.